Oh, now that's it. Whoa! Now that says Sunday nights at 7. But it's 6. Today only. This is the 20th anniversary of our being on KDOC, Channel 56 in Orange County. 20 years. Don't applaud the whole hour. The time is expensive. But Channel 56 called early in the week and said they wanted to make a gesture of appreciation for 20 years on KDOC. And they wanted to preempt and give us this hour in addition to the other 4 hours that follow. That means we'll be on 5 hours tonight. That's like the old days on Channel 30. Marathons. I think I can last if you can. And I found out today that some people are calling in because, you know, we're 24 hours a day off satellite and radio, live on the Internet. 24 hours a day. And my spoiled brat audience, that's the regulars, they pick the times they want to watch. And they think they've seen everything of this last 29 years. You're smarter than me because I don't know what I've done. You couldn't, that cow thing, I couldn't remember what that was. And I had to see it again. What was I laughing at? So they'll call and say, is he live? I'm telling you, the answer right now is no. But I'm the only one that can say that. Now, the phones will start ringing in a minute saying, did he mean that? Is he really not live? When's the last time you heard a dead person talk to you? Your answer is, don't give them the benefit. They got several other things they want to watch, and they tune in, and they call in and say, they probably are out on the beach and picking up their cell phone and saying, is he live? You are not to answer that. You understand that, voices of faith? The answer is, yes. I'm going to teach you the way an attorney teaches you. You don't have to tell the whole truth. Jesus didn't. You remember when he said he cloaked truths in parable, lest they would see and understand, or hear and understand, and see and perceive? And he said, if you can't understand that parable, you can't even be a disciple. Unless they're specific and say, is he sitting in the studio right now, and is this program that I'm seeing going live while he's sitting there? Otherwise, you can answer, yes, he's live. I want you to know I'm live somewhere every time that this TV goes on. You understand that?
Yes,
and if they call and say to you, by then you ought to be hanging up on them. But if they keep going and say, I mean, right now, is he, sir or madam, we cannot answer questions. We can only take messages. I'll write down your question and get it to Dr. Scott, and he can answer whether he's live or not. Got that?
Yes, sir.
You don't answer. You just say, yeah, he's live until they pin you down. I mean, right now, is he sitting there in the studio? Is he sitting there? And they may say, look at their watch and say, right now, is he live at 6:05? Now, you really don't know whether they mean morning or evening unless they specify, correct? So you can answer yes or no to the question. Most people don't know how to ask questions. But if they say, is he live at 6:05 today? I will give your question to Dr. Scott, and he will answer it. And the answer is, I'm live right now, and you better get on the telephone and tell me that 20 years has meant something to you, however much of it you have watched. You understand me? I have a few voices of faith here, not enough. And we had a different kind of service today. And since I got 5 hours, I may get it all out of my system tonight. I'm going to tell you, I have little ways of knowing how right I am when I do something. And this will mean nothing to the general audience that's listening, but to the people that were in the service today or who listened across the network at 11 o'clock, it'll make sense. I benched some people today, people I love, but who have gotten too comfortable and have forgotten who gave them the position they have and have forgotten who they're doing it for. Now, I don't think I'm right. I know I'm right. Had their spirit been right, they would have been kissing the paddle and sitting on the front row here tonight at 6 o'clock. Go find a life somewhere else. Go build a ministry on somebody else's dime. Go find another house to take control of that you don't own. Or get your stupid self in line and kiss the paddle and be glad you didn't get thrown out. There ain't anybody in this church got a privileged position and are above the rules. And this is the Gene Scott who came here 29 years ago to straighten a 28-year-old church out that was about to die from people who had forgotten God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for the perfecting of the saints. And I'm glad to see that you that are here. But a new day is dawning in this church, and new people are coming in. Now, I married a beautiful new wife, and the denomination ordained her, and she's the administrative pastor. And for the next 20 years, she's my helpmate at my side. And all churches have old biddies that get in the church. They don't necessarily have to wear a bun on the back of their head. And I can spot the people in this church quickly who say, "Hello, Mrs. Scott." I want to tell you, I'm the kind of pastor, if I'd married a bobtail chimpanzee, which I didn't, I put my name on her, it better be, "Hello, Mrs. Scott." And, "Well, I'm not done." And then there's the old biddy types, and they can be anywhere from 20 years old to look like they're 200. That when Mrs. Scott comes around, go, "I'm talking to my congregation. Do we understand one another?" It's a privilege to come to the cathedral. I'm the teacher. It's not a public service. And I approve your coming and your going. Those are the house rules, and they're not going to change. And only those that like that are going to keep coming. Some of you that were beauty marks in the early days of this ministry have just become warts. Now, it's my 20th anniversary. I can do anything I want for 5 hours. You understand that? You're going to get Gene Scott unadorned. I could have said it a different way. So, call your friends and say, "The old man's back. It's the same old Gene. 20 years. 20 years buys you something. If all the things that have been said about me were true, I wouldn't be here. You ever thought about that? If all the lies and the charges that were leveled against me when I was fighting for religious freedom in the early days were true, I wouldn't be here. I've survived them all. I'm like the old 97-year-old woman that the pastor asked her, she wasn't willing to forgive all of her enemies. She says, oh, no, I don't have any enemies. Why do you not have any enemies? Well, all the bitches died. Now, I put in over 40 hours this week studying for a message today that I was frustrated in not being able to deliver because I had to deal with some pastoral problems. I didn't like it. It's painful. It's sort of painful to realize you love the people you're disciplining more than those who are disciplined, who've lost their first love. I'm not tolerating any judgmental old or young biddies in this church. I'm not tolerating criticism. But don't you want individuality? No. No. Go start a church your own. Call it the Individuality Church. I want followers who will follow me as I follow Christ. And recognize the time is short when the world and the fields are great and the labors are few. We've got a job to do, folks. And this church will no longer become a parking place for people that want to just do what they want to do. Right here is the stuff of this church. You don't want to get your hands dirty. You don't want to get down off of your pedestal. If you want to define your own ministry, that's the definition of a point man. Get out and start a church. In this church, you're going to follow me as I follow Christ. And I don't want to have to go anymore with a bunch of sour faces sitting in the back. And when this pastor gets on your case, you better show up on the front seat with a smile on your face just as quick as you can. Or sitting in the back means you're that much closer to the door and it takes me less time to get you out. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Oh. That's a little sample of where we're going today. So get on the telephone. Let me know you're glad that we've been here for 20 years. And if you're not, well, then just turn to another program. Because this is reality television. We started it all. We started everything from survival to how to marry a millionaire. We started it all. Every one of these programs we started. Except they're fake and we've been real. Now, get on the telephone. Well, the phones are busy, so I'm going to let it go to another song. Come on, you're saying something, and I'll get your messages in a minute. 20 years is a long time. And we've been a fixture in Los Angeles television for 29 years, but 20 years on KDOC. And thanks to the station, they've given us this extra hour to commemorate that. I want your responses. 20 years on KDOC, Channel 56 in Los Angeles. 29 years this first Sunday of November coming up, unbelievably just a few months away. Half a year is gone. You realize that? And the first Sunday of November, I'll celebrate my 29th anniversary. 29 years as pastor here, starting the 30th year. 20 years on satellite, celebrating that next Sunday, 4th of July weekend. 20 years on KDOC, Channel 56. Today. We're normally on from 7 to 11 Sunday night. Normally we replay the Sunday morning service. every night from 10 to 11 on Channel 56, and I've got to get a list of all the different cable companies because 56 is a must-carry. We're on every cable company in the city. We're on DirecTV. We're on Dish Network. They all must carry 56. But they're different channels. I had somebody stop me coming out of a, came out of a store in Beverly Hills on Friday. He says he watches on Channel 29, Adelphia Cable in Beverly Hills. I need to get a list. And when you call in today and you're watching 56, tell us your city, tell us the cable company, or if you're watching DirecTV, what channel? They got 200, more than that. I need to build a list because some people, they're just addicted. They just turn on DirecTV, 56 and K.N, where that is. I get real pained that I have to look at punch some button and menu and then themes. And then they got me in the religious box. And then I really got mad when I found out the DirecTV that's having to carry, some of them, I don't know whether it was Dish Network or DirecTV or one of them, says we will supply a extra dish free of charge for this program. When you buy these DirecTV and Dish Network people, they're under the obligation of the law as the privilege of being able to broadcast, to carry every full power station in the area. They don't have a choice. So you get on the phone when they tell you to, they'll supply another dish free, you tell them, put that damn porno stuff you have on this network on. Let somebody that wants to watch porno have to buy or have to call you and let you come out and disturb their privacy and put another dish up. Quit being a bunch of cattle led around by the nose. Stand up and fight. They have to carry 56. They'll blast them. Follow me as I follow Christ. Take no prisoners. Take no prisoners. I mean, what kind of Hollywood teenage lame brain that prefers sex and violence to intelligent programming like we do? Well, don't just say yeah to me. When you go out of here, God bless you. Get on the telephone. Well, now I'm finding out. In Hemet, KDOC is on Channel 27, Adelphia Cable. That's what I need. I'll get a list from the station if I can, but I need you to tell me what you're watching. I mean, on which channel and where. 56 DirecTV. Okay. Which channel on DirecTV? You say, I don't know. Well, punch it up and tell me. Reseda is channel 19 on Time Warner Cable. See how confusing it is? I say 56 and people go on their cable to 56 and they're liable to land on a porno channel. Get on the telephone. Okay, no more calls. Finish the calls you have. I'm getting a lot of apologies from people with no name attached. I'm going to go check the files to see what your King's House number was. You know, I told you this morning, don't underestimate this, Pastor. I see through these smoke screens of pride. You know, I'll get my King's House number and I'll apologize and make mountainous commitments. But I won't give my name because the voices of faith might know that I'm the guilty party. I wish they would come up with a shot, a vaccine that I could spend a Sunday at the front of the cathedral and jab all of you in the rump with an anti-pride vaccine on one side and a humility vaccine on the other side. You might be capable of being saved. Pride. I mean, it's amazing with my staff people. Amazing how humble and articulate and repentant they get when I just address them one-on-one. But you let one of the other gang members be present, man, do they waffle. My Bible says, know no man after the flesh. You ain't going to make it to heaven until you start hating your flesh the way God does. He didn't send his son to die for you because he loved your sinning, egocentric, self-serving, go-your-own-way self. I mean, what a paradox. I mean, what a contradiction, not a paradox. Christ died for the ungodly. While we were yet sinners, Christ died for us. He loves what's in us that can be brought forth with an injection of the Spirit. Now, I got a congregation that's not even listening to what I'm... Well, sort yourself out as I talk. The shoe fits, wear it. There's exceptions. There's a solid core in this church. A lot of them are right here. But it's the ones that won't accept this. You know, I'm in the 22nd verse of the 3rd chapter of Romans that I preached today. But now, 21st verse, a righteousness of God without the law is manifested. Even the righteousness of God which is by faith of Jesus Christ unto all. And upon all them that faith. The next verse says, I haven't gotten there yet. For all, that means you and 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 me. I want you to understand, this book of Romans was not written to sinners. It wasn't even written to heathen. It was written to Christians. And if you read the tenses in the Greek, it's an ongoing, continuous state. All have sinned and come short of the glory of God. Now, are any of you under the delusion? See me, you see the glory of God. Huh? Doxa. The outraying of God's own nature. That's what Jesus was. In 7 grand statements in the opening chapter of Hebrews, among others, he's the outraying of God's glory. He is the proof coin struck in human flesh of what God's nature controlling the flesh would look like. And starting with this preacher who joined Paul, who said he was the chiefest of sinners, not a single one of you. Not a single one of you. But what it can be said, you've come short of the glory of God. That's why now another kind of righteousness, another kind of behavior another state of being that God will call right, which thus makes it right. Can suffice in the place of our short, falling, failing self. I don't want anybody in this congregation that thinks they've made it. I don't want you here. Because you're impossible to reach. You can't be saved, and spiritual pride must be broken. You've never heard this pastor say, I've made it. Or you've heard this pastor say, I got a charge laid on me. And for better or for worse, I'm responsible as the pastor of this congregation. And therefore, this hard head, since I take responsibility, I will author. And if you stop thinking that the author that is in me is other than God who is prompting me to the authorship, if God's not sending His authority through me, go find another church, because you're a fool if you don't. Democracy sucks. I repeat, democracy sucks. I repeat, democracy sucks.
Yes, sir.
This country is not a democracy, and what fool talking head sold that? I believe they got in the paper today, the real Franklin, will he stand up in some book thing that's just been written. Thomas Jefferson must be rolling in his grave as he listens to the fool media and the ignorant people that are in politics today that know about as much about history as I know about flying spaceships, saying, we're a democracy. We are not a democracy. Never were a democracy. Never intended to be a democracy. And it's impossible to put democracy into a rock. You can't have what we have here, and you can't have any semblance of democratic activity under control without a constitution that protects the minority. And the democracy idea is rule and tyranny of the majority. We never were intended to be a democracy. We're a republic. And some of these mouthing news commentators have never done anything but break wind with their mouth on TV. Need to go back to school and study some history. Maybe they study the Bible, they'd find every time the majority had its say, they departed God. The majority in the Bible is always wrong. No exceptions. The only time they're right, the few times God was going to wipe them out, and when all of them knew they were going to be killed by God, they suddenly began to pray and praise God. That's the only time they were ever right. God, deliver me from a democracy. Oh, they'll take that out of context when they quote it. We are not a democracy. And have you noticed how the Iraqis are praising the Americans and running into the streets to give them flowers and sugar because we have given them the opportunity for democracy? They don't know what it is. This country is not a democracy. It's a constitutional government. Some of these talking heads need to read John Locke. And some of you need to find the old Truth magazine, Lex Rex, or Rex Lex. Is the law king, or is the king law? Now, you may say, well, you've been talking like The pastor is king, no? Right here is the king. The objective written statement, the constitution for the church, God's word. As they say in the profound theological circle, the eternal word became the incarnate word, became the spoken word, became the written word, became the implanted word, became the engrafted word, produces the new incarnate word, and the circle is complete in eternity. I'm under this book. And I'm sent by God to interpret this book to the congregation I pastor. And 20 years and 29 years as pastor have demonstrated, I don't come to you with some new God told me message. I unwrap this book. I don't say, the Greek said, I show you from the manuscripts what it says. This country is the first country the world ever saw that came into being as a result of a social contract between the people and the government, allowed to come into existence by that contract. John Locke and others and their philosophic treatises define the social contract between the people. Through the agony of the history of the British government, the issue had to be faced. Is the king law? No. The law is king. And the kingship, and we don't have a verb for it, kinging, was within the perimeters of the law, who granted the king his right to kinging. There was no government here. We're imposing a government in Iraq. We're trying to gather a bunch of divided people together, get them to agree on a government. Until a constitution is accepted and embraced, there is no government. This country was allowed to come into existence by a contract. The preamble says, we hold these things dear. And for a list of things that the people who were embracing and writing and entering into this social contract, that they felt was sufficient for the common good, that they would give up their individuality and submit themselves to this stated contract of behavior between the diverse units for the common good, which was defined. But because government has the tendency to breed authority that breeds authority and then becomes corrupt, the embracers of the possibility of government, the diverse units, the colonies, would not submit to this constitutional controlling instrument that bound them together as one for the common good without the Bill of Rights. They wouldn't sign it. Oh, Madison argued. This Constitution says the government only has the powers defined herein. And to have a Bill of Rights that says the government can't do thus or can't do that is to presuppose or imply that there are powers the government has not enumerated in the Constitution. Be lost. Even though the Constitution said, we are joining together and we're writing this contract, and we will give up certain self-determinative, certain individual activities, we will place these limits on ourselves, and we will accept an overall federalism that in these areas defines what we can and can't do. That's the Constitution. And the federal government created by this instrument has no powers other than what's enumerated herein. So in logic, Madison was right. To have a Bill of Rights that says you can't do some things that aren't enumerated in here is suggesting that there are things not enumerated in here that they can do. And at least Jefferson understood, once created, this monstrous Frankenstein potential called government could grow out of size. And they would not ink the contract that bound them until they recognize in the never exceeded phraseology of Jefferson, there are certain inalienable rights that only God can give, and man can neither give nor take away. And unless these rights are added as a Bill of Rights that restricts the government in these specific areas, we won't bind ourselves. And those rights were to protect the minority. Those rights were to protect the minority. Democracy, purely stated, is the tyranny of the majority. Majority rules. The Bill of Rights tells the majority here and no further. And that's government. Thank God I was born in the United States. Thank God I got a voice. Thank God I'm going down fighting. But I ain't down yet. And I've got the battle scars and the tenure. And it's as old as philosophy. If you can't win on the facts, you argue to the man. If you can't defeat his logic, you come up with any kind of lie you can tell to smear him and to cloud his voice. That's what the media and the government tried to do to me years ago. That's why I created the monkey band. I mean, they tried to dream up, I even got it from sworn testimony. Some of them say, there's got to be something there. If we could just get in, we'd find something to silence it, because I was calling them the monkeys of the century. I mean, one example. You got a fountain of faith building, flowing $30,000, 30,000 gallons of water, recycled. And they want tens of thousands of names and addresses of members to prove that I built the fountain. So I granted them the Bureaucratic Monkey Award of the Year. I mean, you know, if they want to know if I built the fountain, let me baptize them in it. So I'll convince them. Well, if you have nothing to hide, why don't you open up? If you knew what I'm hiding, you'd understand why I wear clothes. I got plenty to hide. too much character to create insecurity around the world. I've got a right to hide nothing, though in the analogy that's not the case. That was what my battles were about. The right to hide nothing. Oh, you're a church. I remember I landed my plane once in Kentucky, going to my ranch in Kentucky, and we landed, and here's a bunch of at least 15 cop cars descend on the airport. Now, one of the friends of the city was the manager of a bank. Now, on the board of directors, one of the largest depositors, the oldest ranch in the county, is there with his car and his trunk open to pick us up. Oh, we had the largest ranch in the county. And the manager that I hired at the ranch was there. And they descended from all sides. Wouldn't let us leave the plane. We got out of the plane. Wouldn't let us leave the plane. Now 7 o'clock coming up. People are going to join us in the middle of this story. Oh, you don't want to hear it anyway. Get on the telephone. Now, where have you been? You that joined us at 7? We've been here for an hour. It's our 20th year on KDOC. 29th year on television in Los Angeles and around the world. The management of the station called us and said they wanted to commemorate the 20th anniversary on KDOT by extending the hours, giving us the hour from 6 to 7, which just passed. If you didn't like it, it was free. This hour is our regular time. We've been on for an hour. And we'll be on until 11. And as we were approaching the 7 o'clock hour, I was in the midst of telling the story where a bunch of government agents made fools of themselves and had to apologize. But I got interrupted. Now, maybe I'll finish the story. But not right now, because we just started the 7 o'clock hour. And so, you know, I'm sure you'll remind me sometime between now and 11 o'clock, and maybe I'll finish the story of a bunch of badge-happy cops making asteroid orifices of themselves. They really did. I got apologies, and they got invitations to help them do things differently. I read for the political science prof who would not sign and led the crusade not to sign the loyalty oath. I'm tired of what the government is doing with its invasions of our rights. And I'm telling you, Antichrist cannot come to power until the Bill of Rights is destroyed. And if you were to take a vote, a majority vote in America today, they'd vote the Bill of Rights out. They just want security. I remember asking the political science prof why he wouldn't sign the loyalty oath. Young, and I didn't say it condemnatory, I was curious. He said, for the communists, lying is their mode of operation. They'll sign it in New York minute. What do they care? I will not sacrifice academic freedom to swear to something that I don't have to swear to, that violates the whole premise of you're innocent until proven guilty. of churches all over America that criticized me for fighting. They would have lost their freedoms in the 70s in the overreaction to Jimmy Jones and the punch-drinking crowd down in South America. He wasn't even a Christian. When he left here, he'd already become a communist. But every pastor was supposed to do penance for what he did. The price of freedom is association with nuts. The war against drugs has not accomplished a thing. If anything, there's more drugs. All the war against drugs did was take away your freedoms, encroach on civil rights. Well, I'll get some reactions. Well, call a phone that you're paying for. Don't call mine to complain. But we'll just hang up on you. This is a different church than most churches. We don't want the stupid. I do not believe morons will make it to heaven. Sorry. My Bible says, if you have not the Spirit of Christ, you're none of His. And my Bible says, you have the Spirit of Christ, you have the mind of Christ. That rules out morons. You become a new creature in Christ Jesus. You stop being so dumb, so damn dumb. You know, I like this 4 hours tonight. I like this. You know why I like this? I mean, you know, I've been doing what I love to do, which is teach. And many of you are just seeing me teach the Bible. And you're going to come to the cathedral, meet the real Gene, and get surprised. But I want you to know who the real Gene is. I don't wear a holier-than-thou suit. I don't claim some superior spiritual pipeline. I don't go to the drugstore and the Lord speaks to me and tells me which brand of toilet paper to buy. I sin a lot. So are these holier-than-thou preachers. I just am the only one that tells you the truth. I sin a lot. I sin every day. Lots of sins. Big sins. Sins of thought and sins of deed. If it weren't for God, none of you would be safe in my presence. Now, have we got that straight? This church is pastored by a sinning pastor. Am I proud of my sins? No, I am. But they overcome me sometimes. Well, that's awful. My Bible says that him that's overtaken, is the word, in a fault. If you see a brother overtaken in a fault, restore such a one in the spirit of meekness, and consider yourself lest ye also be taken. See, most people translate that verse, or they interpret it to themselves. If a brother be overtaken in a fault, means he got caught by some of you judgmental asteroids. No, it means the old man in him overtook him and got out. And you that are you're judging, better consider yourselves, because the same old man dwells in you. Lest ye also be overtaken. I'm sick of hypocritical preachers. I'm sick of this nonsense wearing filthy rags of self-righteousness and projecting themselves as the model of Christianity. The closer you get to God, the more you're able to see the distance between where you are and where God is. I sin every day. But I'm thankful to God that I'm more conscious today of spiritual sins than fleshly sins. And I'm thankful to God that temptations that used to attract me do not anymore. And I'm thankful to God that some of the scales of self-centeredness have fallen sufficiently from my eyes that I can see the spiritual sins that really grieve the heart of God. I did my doctoral dissertation on Reinhold Niebuhr, who is maybe the world's greatest analyzer of sin. The neo-Orthodox theologians understood sin if they didn't understand anything else. Their liberal theology was blasted by the First and the Second World War, where the most educated nation created the most heinous crimes. And Niebuhr pastored a church that grew from 100 to 1,000 as he watched Henry Ford become a hero on the world stage, making animals and slaves of people to machines. With his anti-Semitism, like a glaring scab on all that he did. And their view that man was basically good was blown asunder. And that salvation, that sin was ignorance and salvation was education. And it's called neo-orthodoxy as a theology that blew apart liberalism, because they went back to the Bible and discovered that what's wrong on the world stage is men are sinners. That in stark contrast to the love of God, love of self rules. And every moment of your life that you choose self over God, you're sinning. And he quite rightly figured out that the sins of the flesh are the easiest. The spiritual mental IQ, spiritual Q, of a church is exhibited the highest when they would reduce the function of the church down to doing nothing but abusing people and criticizing people and condemning people for sexual sins and for sensual sins. Now, I'm not promoting sexual sins or sensual sins. But anybody with any intelligence understands, a moron can figure out that there's something within him that was destined to be higher than making yourself a slave to some pleasure urge in your flesh. And those that have done it can quickly tell you it runs its course. And even the dope addicts will tell you they can't duplicate the first hit. Niebuhr was eloquent. Those are the easiest sins for God to deal with. Because sensuality is taking this being destined for eternity and making it a slave to some sensual impulse, some pleasure impulse. Is that all we exist for? To gorge ourselves, if it's the sin of gluttony, to become a sexual pervert, to live from high to high and a drug addict, to make this high nature of ours become a slave to some peanut urge within our body, Nothing wrong with pleasure. We're talking about becoming a slave to it. You don't really need God to deliver yourself from that. You just need a little bit of brains. You don't need God to show you that man certainly can live on a higher plane of existence than from morning to night being a slave to your body. Yet how many centuries has the church occupied itself with the whole ministry and denigrated God and brought Him down, that Jesus only died to set you free from being a slave to your body? You can take a pill to curb that. There may be side effects, but you know, the science has figured out how you can't control your appetite. Take a diet pill. There's some good, some bad, not any of them that I'm too high on. Oh, I'm a slave to this little white cigarette. I'm going to take a patch. I mean, the TV's got all kinds of things that cure you of that. Surely Jesus died for something greater than what a TV ad can deliver you from. And he climbed the ladder and rightly analyzed spiritual pride. Pride, and then the worst kind of pride, spiritual pride. All we like sheep have gone astray, we've turned everyone to our own way. And it was Lionel Niebuhr who said, we're not satisfied to just be sinners. We've got to convince ourselves that our sin is really not sin after all. Yes, it is. It was Dr. Tozier, 25 years in a pastorate, praying and studying in a cubbyhole of an office before he broke forth on the scene with his first book, The Pursuit of God, that understood most of Christianity is the same business on the other side of the street. Same techniques, same striving to succeed, same putting self first, just putting a halo around it. Churches are built finding out what you want. Mega churches with Madison Avenue techniques. I don't know why modern Christianity doesn't do what Jefferson did. Just create a Bible of your own. Take out what you don't like. And out goes Luke 14 right off the bat. If any man will come after me and hate not, including his own self. Yeah, I'm a sinner. I recognize. That's why I want to get through this book of Romans. I recognize that I have no hopes apart from the fact that God decided He would remove that burden on us of making ourselves perfect to stand in with Him. And He would move into a tent of human flesh and exhibit the perfection that we don't have. And having fulfilled the law, as the Colossian letter says, nail it to a tree, that handwriting of ordinances would no longer club us to death. And a God who has the right to say that what He wants is right and what He is right, decides He will give us His rightness for something else. Sinners though we are. Well, you said you're a sinner. I sure am every day. But I am being saved. And thanks be to God, I'm able to look back and see, yeah, there's some things that grieve my Lord, I don't do anymore. But I didn't just stop it. And I didn't try to fake it so some Sister Sal would think I was a saint. I kept trusting God, taking His promises, living in faith. In more recent years, with threats to life, that demonic, cancerous threat to life. We fade our way through it twice, Everybody thinks I look sick. You're crazy. I'm getting ready for my 77-mile birthday ride now on my bicycle. I'll show you how people are. I had a doctor. The doctor had operated, put my stent in my heart 5-6 years ago. And I'd go in for these annual reports to him, and I told him that I rode 70, that was 71 then. I rode 71 miles on my bicycle on my birthday. I think there's some staff members in this building that were still around that rode it in relays. And Melissa's the only one that could keep up with me. Right then and there, among other things, I said, this is the one. I was going to ride 71 miles. We ended up riding 72. I went in and told the doctor, I rode my bicycle 71 miles on my birthday, in case he was wondering, am I okay? Now, I had a reason to get my medical reports for another doctor for another reason, and I looked at it and I couldn't believe it. He wrote down in my, you ought to check your medical records with your doctors. You know, boy, they can assassinate you. They can give opinions. They can say things about you that they'd go to jail for saying in any other context. You're opinionated. They believe they're God. And I read this and he said, I mean, for starters, he called me a television evangelist. Man, I went to the top management of that hospital. I mean, there are lots of parts of that hospital that exist because of the contributions I've made. You know, doctors are expendable, but donors aren't. You understand? I said, I got a few choice words to put in his report. If you don't understand, I'm not a television evangelist. Those are fighting words for me. That's the same as calling me a nigger, a kike, a spig, or any other derogatory term. Television evangelist means crook. Don't call me a television evangelist. I'm not trying to convert anybody. I haven't got some bubble-headed idiot. Well, remember when I said this, a television evangelist went to a sex shop and bought one of these rubber women, blew her up, put a wig on, and sat her here and said, honey, have you got something you want to say? I'm a teacher. I'm a pastor. I am not a television evangelist. The Pope's on television. Who ever called him a television evangelist? They even say evangelist Billy Graham. He is an evangelist. They don't say television evangelist Billy Graham. It's an epithet. These television evangelists ought to wear clothes. They haven't got the gonads necessary to fight against what's being done. I'm not a television evangelist. And that doctor heard from powers that be. But then I read this other thing. Patient drove. He said, patient drove 71 miles on his birthday. I thought, this man ain't ever operating on me again. No. This man, he ain't getting close to any of my parts. I mean, what an insult that I'm in there bragging that I drove 71 miles on my birthday in an air-conditioned Cadillac or... I'm ready to brag to you today that I drove 71 miles on my birthday. I rode a bicycle. Not that former Chrysler CEO with the motor on it. What do you call that thing? What's his name? Who? Lee Iacocca. Well, he can ride that one with the motor. I pedal. Isn't that outrageous?
Yes, sir.
I mean, a serious medical record. He's putting in there in the permanent records. Patient drove 71 miles on his birthday. I really did a good job on him. Send me more patients. When I'm done with them, they'll be able to drive 71 miles on their birthday. That's enough to make everybody go seek a stent, whether they need one or not. Get a stent in your heart. You can drive 71 miles on your birthday. As if anybody in Los Angeles would want to drive 71 miles on their birthday. Yeah, I'm a sinner. Spiritual sin, physical, and sensual sins are not the biggest problem God has. He can deliver you from that the easiest. If you knew any Bible, some of these people, they'd understand that what God talks about is what He's most concerned about. When He opens His mouth, He talks first about that which He's most concerned about. And if you've ever noticed, we're kind of like God. When you start talking, normally your first reactions are that which you're most concerned about. You're in trouble, you start defending yourself. If you're giving things away, you want to get it for you. You can read in the Bible the laws of the offerings. What means the most to God, He starts with. What means the most to us, He ends with. He's so distant from us. But in the laws of the offering, where it's not just the statement of the laws, but how we are to practice the movement toward God through these laws of the offering, we first start with what's closest to us, the trespass offering, the things we know we do wrong. That's the first offering we have to give. That's the last thing God talks about. Then the sin offering, a little higher level, because that deals with our condition. That's when we come to understand that we are sinners not because we sin, but rather we sin because we're sinners. There's something wrong with our nature. We just have a bent toward self and providing pleasure and satisfaction to self. And the current philosophy and the progressive education and the current attitude of America, me first, is surrendering to that urge. The sin offering, you're not interested in, well, I stole this, or I lied here, or I did this little dabble in trespass. The sin offering is, woe is me. There's something wrong with me. I have something in my nature that produces those trespasses. So then the sin offering has to be taken care of. The last thing you get to in that series of blood sacrifices is the burnt and the peace offerings. That's what God's concerned about. That's what's close to the heart of God. Those are the dedicatory, spiritual offerings, not the cleansing that makes us able to stand before God on the merits of a sacrifice that we couldn't make ourselves, a substitute. We're sinners, folks, being saved by grace. And God now takes our faith in place of this checklist of perfection. That's the message I preach. That's what I came to preach. That's what I stand for. I don't intend to change. And if you want to celebrate with me these 20 years of proclaiming that message of faith, get on the phone and say, I'm glad you're there. Get on the phone. I have plenty of voices of faith. I have a story that I said I might finish. It happened in Kentucky as I was coming to the 7 o'clock hour. We have 5 hours tonight because it's our 20th anniversary on 56. The station gave that they wanted to give an extra unscheduled hour from 6 to 7. So we've been here an hour and 35 minutes. And we'll be here until 11 o'clock. Normally we replay the Sunday morning service sometime during this, what is normally 4 hours. And we're on every night from 10 to 11 on 56, and we're around the world and all over this nation 24 hours a day on the internet, shortwave. You can get the frequencies. I don't understand why everybody doesn't buy a shortwave. Get it for $30, $40, $50, $60. Get a little wind-up antenna to extend it. You can pick us up anywhere in the world 24 hours a day. America has not, the public that is, have not advanced in their knowledge of shortwave, and they still think it's some great big giant box that squeaks and squawks. You've had no reason to get sophisticated in the use of shortwave because we have freedom of the press here. We went into shortwave because the majority of the world, shortwave is their medium. They don't trust, they don't have free press. They don't have a Bill of Rights. They don't trust their regular media because it's government controlled. So the only broadcast medium that crosses international lines is shortwave. The BBC and the Voice of America have known that for years. In many respects, we're bigger than BBC and Voice of America, in that we cover the globe 24 hours a day. We don't just spot pick a couple hours here and a couple hours there. I went into shortwave because the third world listens to shortwave. Last time you got into a cab in China, didn't it have a shortwave, Craig? And shortwave has moved just like other media advancements. Look at the advance in the internet. In a very short time, you're going to be able to turn on the internet and you'll be able to see pictures as clear as you're seeing on TV. I'm amazed at the degree to which it's improved since we first went on internet. We don't just have a home page. We're 24 hours a day off satellite. I'm live right now around the world on the internet. Live right now around the world on shortwave. Multiple frequencies. The Voice of Faith will give them to you. We're off two satellites. You can pick us up anywhere in America. GE3 transponder 20. 24 hours a day. But today we're heralding 56 in our hometown, Los Angeles, because this is not just our 20th anniversary on satellite coming up next Sunday, but our 20th anniversary on Channel 56 here in Los Angeles, KDOC. I think that's neat, KDOC. KDOC. They say, why KDOC? Are you involved with that station? I said, one never knows, does one? I'm pretty involved. 5 hours today. It's almost like the old days on Channel 30. Now, I want you to celebrate with us. I have a story I might finish. Got some more teaching to do about we sinners, which we all are. And I'm inviting people to make their reservations for the cathedral. If you understand you're coming to a place that's like a college classroom, you can't just walk in. You got to get a pass. You call and make a reservation. And all you have to do is let us know you're coming to hear the teaching and to see the cathedral. And you understand, it's not like an ordinary church. You sit down and you listen. I'm a tough teacher and I... No cell phones. No beepers. Kids from 2 to 12 are taken to a museum, one of many in our area that's prepared for them with adult supervision. Nursery 2 and under. You don't get into the cathedral unless you're 12 or over. And if you're not married or of age, you're going to sit with your parents. Not discussable. My classroom, I'm easy. Just sit there and act like you're interested and don't interrupt me. It's just like a college classroom in religion. If you watch nightly from 10 to 11, you'll see what we do. And you shouldn't come until you first see what we do. Don't want any church tramps. Don't want anybody looking for a dating game. I think I made that clear today. I don't police your private life. I don't care what you do off the premises. I set the rules in the house, just like you do in the house you're responsible for. And if you understand that's what a king's house is, you ought to recognize that your house is the Lord's. And you're responsible as the priest in your home. But in the house of the Lord, God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers for the perfecting of the saints. I take that job seriously. And you that think you're perfect, don't you dare come to this church. Not wanted. Perfect people not allowed. You understand that? Perfect people not allowed. Sinners wanted. Sinners who know they're sinners. Wanted. Send me all the sinners in town. But just sit down and keep your mouth shut and listen. And I will point you to the way that God will progressively uncenter you. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
You don't have to change to come to the cathedral. But faith cometh by hearing, hearing with the word of God, that's what I teach. And look out, if faith is born, God will give you the righteousing implant. And you'll find yourself changing. Slowly, because it's a growth, and the fruit of the Spirit will find its way into your behavior. And spirituality is nothing other than the expressions of the Spirit, God being Himself in and through you as a gift of His presence when you trust Him. I'm in the business of faith production, not this kind of faith that wants to work magic. Trusting God where you live in the everyday streets, that's what the incarnation is. God moved into the streets where ordinary people live. And He didn't become a freak show in the name of God. The freak shows called Him a wine bibber and a glutton. That means He must have partaken of His food joyfully. I still love that cartoon I saw in a Berkeley school newspaper. Bunch of drunks sitting around the table at the wedding of Cana. And they're drinking, and they ran out of wine. And one old drunk looked over, and the cartoons had Jesus sitting next to him. And, of course, the early part of the cartoon, he's like a teenager. I don't want to go, Mommy. And she's dragging him to this wedding feast, and he's sitting there watching these people get progressively drunk. And I still have fun with my legalistic friends saying, you know, you still got to answer me. You killjoys in Christianity, you think that God's a cosmic killjoy trying to find people having a good time so He can stop it. You want to tell me why the first miracle in every fundamentalist Bible, the first miracle Jesus did was to turn water to wine to keep the party going. Well, it wasn't real wine. Well, try to tell that to the drunks. Anyway, this cartoon had Jesus sitting there, and they ran out, and the old drunk sitting next to Jesus, no more wine. And Jesus in the cartoon just looked over and went flat, and it turned to wine. The water turned to wine. And the drunk said, how do you do that? The cloud above his head. And then the next sequence in the cartoon, they're all lifting their glasses and singing, what a friend we have in Jesus. Now get on the telephone. Make your reservation for the cathedral now that you know what it's about. Now I want the voice of faith moving around. There's obviously certain phones that are higher on the rotary than others, and same people are answering those phones all the time. So, just tell them to move. You want to answer some phones for a change. Say, Doc told me to tell you to move. Just get up and move. Let me answer this phone, because I see you're talking all the time, and I'm not talking. I want everybody involved in here. I don't know what's the matter with you people out there. You can get on the phone and get everybody in this room busy. I'm tired of entertaining you. Now, I've gotten some apologies today, and I appreciate them. And people get up, point in the right direction, their apologies are sincere. People give way to the flesh. But then when you start justifying the flesh, that's when you sin in the spirit. That's when the sin turns evil. Don't make an excuse for yourself. I was pretty strict in the platform today. I don't police your sex lives. I don't want to know what you do. I don't want... I don't do any counseling. I don't want to hear all the color of your sins. I tell you, I sin every day, but I didn't give you any color. You can't police people. And that's not my ministry. I teach you. God's with you all the time. You and God work it out. Except on the premises. I want women to come here and not have to worry about men hitting on them. I want men to come here and not have to worry about women hitting on them. Just get a long-range rifle and find them off the premises. You understand?
Sure.
No place for that in this church. That's why, as a single man, I have very strong convictions about doctors having affairs with patients, lawyers having affairs with clients, pastors having affairs with members of their congregation. What a heinous slam on the cause of Christ that two brother pastors are in the newspaper fighting down in Orange County because the two brothers as associates, a senior and associate pastor, and the senior pastor has been having an affair with his brother's wife for 18 years. I mean, my God, women are like streetcars. There's one coming around every corner. And you have to restrict your sight. What kind of sick, emaciated, have-not are you? You come here to be a voice of faith, not a singing siren. Take you a while to get that one. You got to be swift here, you know. You got to bring your brain when you arrive. When I was single, I went outside the church. Man, I got lots of criticism, you remember? Yeah. Well, all the women in my church and all the husbands of all the women, I can say this down through the years that I've been a pastor. No man in my church ever had to worry about whether I was sitting on a platform sizing up their wife. Can't say that about too many churches. There are good men pastoring churches. Usually your spirit can figure it out. But I drew the line today on turning this place into a dating game. If you ain't man enough to find a woman without raiding the camp here, you ain't man enough to be in this church. I got a letter from some ex-woman employee, how she found a man. He's not a Christian. Oh, and he's brave and he's courageous and this and that. He's not a Christian. Well, my question is, has she spread her legs to him yet? Because she's trying to get him to save. She wants to get him to get into the church and listen to the teaching. Well, if she's already given him, I don't know. All I know is past practice and reputation. If she's already given him, you don't need to buy the cow if you get the milk free. Isn't it interesting what you hear from this pastor? Now, I wonder how Brother Heine or Sister Sally would have handled that problem. I think God's people ought to be the most alive and most attractive in the world. All the men in my church, women ought to be chasing everywhere you go. You get God in you, there's something about your nature that just, people, they see something different. I just want to say that again. Thank you for your apologies, people that are guilty. You can start over with me. But some of you have perfected the act of getting up the right direction, and it don't work with me anymore. I'm going to heaven, folks. I'd like to finish Romans, but the closer I get there, the more certain I am that this is just a little brief time here, and death is a beginning, and my hope is eternal. And I want to take my charge, the sheep of this church, with me. And I can only take you with me if I shine a sufficient light from God's Word on your path that you know the right way to go. Some of those I chastised today know they're guilty. I'm grateful for those that have the concern about their soul and eternity that have apologized. And you that are home licking your wounds and feeling sorry for yourself and thinking that this pastor in this church owes you something for what you've done over the years, we don't owe you anything. The debt's the other way around. You have received the words of life eternal. And you've had an opportunity to participate, and you're canceling out everything that you did by getting an inflated opinion of you and what you can accomplish. I don't want anybody in this church who won't. I'm not going to have a foot washing service, but that's the meaning of the foot washing service. If you ain't willing to wash feet, you ain't willing to, you ain't going to be part of this. Now, as a boy, I went to a few foot washing services, and it became an instrument of self-righteousness. Symbolic. It's not a sacrament. Unless you're walking barefoot in sandals, and the stuff that we're walking in the Middle Eastern world is not too much about washing feet that impresses me. But it sure takes you down a peg or two to wash the feet that just stepped in a ass's dump. I'm talking about the animal. That's what even Jesus rode. An ass. One of them talked to Balaam. Unless you walked on those roads and those dirty streets, no big deal to wash your feet. Symbolically, Jesus said, when you go to a feast, take the low room. Don't seek the high room. It's much better to be asked to go upstairs than to be told to go downstairs. Too many people have been around here long enough that they think they have an entitlement to the seat in the upper room. I'm not a very good pastor if I don't send you to the lower room once in a while. And I'm really not a good pastor if I can't, with God's Word, make you understand that now is when you began. You deserve the low room. And you're only privileged and honored when you get in the upper room. This church is going to keep doing it God's way. Those that don't like it, there's plenty of other pastors you can graze in. These are the terms here. And if you want to come to a church like that, get on the telephone and make your reservations. We are live. We've been live 2 hours now. It's our 20th anniversary on Channel 56. The management of the station gave us, volunteered and said they wanted to commemorate the 20th anniversary by giving us an hour free beyond our regular time from 6 to 7. And I said yes, and that's why I came live. Normally on Sunday night we replay the Sunday morning service, but we're live now. It's like old times when we were 4 and 5 hours every night on Channel 30, around the clock. Now, we do have the normal things that need to be done, which is the reservations for the cathedral this coming Sunday. This coming Sunday, 4th of July, is also a special day because it commemorates our 20th year on satellite. And then August 10th is a special day. My birthday is August 14th, and so I never forget my anniversary. We got married on the 13th, and we celebrate that double event. Melissa put a little pain in my birthday ride. Now it accumulates at 2 years per year. Because she insists that in addition to riding my birthday on the bicycle ride, we ride our anniversary. So that means I got to add 3 years to my age. I got to ride 77 miles this year. Right. And I'm starting to get ready for it now. And usually the training starts up in the Almanor area, some of those beautiful pictures you've seen of Mount Lassen's on the bike trail around Lake Almanor. But we start riding at that high altitude, 5,000 feet. You remember the ride we took over the summit through Lassen Park? The air gets kind of thin at 8,400 feet. I'm pressing on, folks. I got too many deadbeats in my congregation that want to lay down and die. My Bible shows me that the greatest tests come at the end of your ministry. The cross came at the end of Jesus' ministry. This congregation ought to be ready to do the greatest things they've ever done because of the 29 years of training. The faith test that God lays on us now should be beyond that of the ordinary Christian. So cheer up, saints. Don't get worse. Let's keep this anniversary. And come back next year, the 21st, having accomplished great things for God in faith. Now, I want you to make a few calls. I'm going to do some more teaching, but I want you to make the calls now. I've been talking. You get on the phone. I got a house full of voices of faith. I want them all busy. Now, dial that number. It's the start. July 1st starts double portion month. If you don't know what that's about, you shouldn't be participating. We still have Secret 16, and you got to have that done by August 14th. And my birthday Sunday is the 10th of August. Special guests will be there. I want all of you to come and celebrate my birthday. And in faith, we're going to claim another 30, at least. Takes that long. I mean, how many messages have I preached on the 22nd verse of Romans 3? At about 10 messages per verse, count the verses to the end of the 16th chapter. You know how long God has to keep me alive. Now, get on the telephone! You know, we were on it this morning in Washington, D.C., as we are every Sunday morning. Requires voices of faith here at 2:30 in the morning because we come on at 5:30 in Washington, D.C. on Channel 5, the V station. I'd like to read you some of the reactions. I'm reading these cold myself. This is this morning, 2:30 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. It'd be 6:30 or 5:30 East Coast time. Aspen Hills, Maryland. You can keep calling, answer the phone if it rings. This is the response from our capital. This program is beyond excellent. I'm quite moved. I'm very moved. This man is truly a man of God, and I'd like to have this video. I wish everyone taught like Dr. Scott does. And we find them around the country, they've moved. Here's Hyattsville, Maryland. I'm watching Pastor Scott. I'm an old King's House. Now, King's House is very simple. If you've listened long enough and you want to identify, if you listen to me, you will recognize your house is the Lord's. You want to state that. My house is the Lord. As for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. And I'm just a direction giver from God's Word in such a way that you Decide yourself whether it's coming at you accurate, and then you do what you want with it. I'm not going to coerce you. But if you want to be identified with what we're trying to do around the world and share in the rewards, the King's House makes a very simple commitment to watch or listen at least once a week and support in some way. Just that simple. That's all it is. But it identifies you. I'm an old King's House returning to the fold. My tithe's in the mail. I've been watching him for 25 years. Baltimore, Maryland. I'm calling from Baltimore, Maryland. But I'm from Chicago, Illinois. Tell Dr. Scott we want him in the whole world, not just Baltimore. No boundaries. We enjoy him very much, and God bless him. Washington, D.C., White Plains, Maryland. I'm reading these cold. I don't know what I'm getting into. I'm calling to let Dr. Scott know how much I enjoy the program. I enjoy the discussion and the translating he does in the Hebrew and Greek. It's fascinating. I've been watching for a while now, and it's the highlight of my week. Washington, D.C., tell Dr. Scott I'm enjoying the program. I can't even read this. Somewhere in Maryland. This is a very, very interesting program. How often is this on? I'm going to keep watching. Falls Church, Virginia, calling to say how much I enjoy the program. I'd like to have a video of this program. We send them a tape list. Arlington, Virginia. How much he enjoys the program, wants to be on the mailing list. Fall Church is the name. I just started watching. And like what I'm hearing, I'm enjoying this. I'm hoping my husband will be helped. Fort Washington, Maryland. I'm enjoying what I'm hearing. This is the first time I've seen you. It's wonderful the way you break down the names of God. Everything sounds right on. He's a pastor. Washington. First time listening. How much I'm enjoying your teaching. Why are you listening to this, not answering phones? I'm not even going to tell you the rest of that story if you don't get on the telephone. Thank you, Glenburg, Maryland, Dr. Scott, for your message this morning. I really was helped by it. This is so wonderful, Stanton, Virginia. I watch this every time I can. His teaching is great. I'm up early on Sunday for Sunday school, and I'm glad to see you on television. Somewhere else in Maryland, I've watched a couple of times. I really enjoy it. I hope you continue to stay on. Washington, D.C., he watched the show, enjoyed it. Second time I've watched. I really like it. Washington, D.C., I'd love to have a video of this program. I love watching this program. He's fantastic. I just saw Dr. Scott on television for the first time. Is he on every week? Can I go to his website for information? Yeah, drgenescott.com. On and on. Patlow, Virginia. Falls Church, Virginia. Woodbridge, Virginia. So, I like this. Simple. First time watching. I like this, Gene Scott. I don't know about any of the others. I don't know. He likes this Gene Scott. Somebody sent me a paper of some Reverend Gene Scott doing something down in the woods in Florida or somewhere. It's only me. I don't know what Scott fooled around with these others, but I'm the only one at this line. I don't have brothers, don't have sisters. Mother and father have gone to heaven. Me and Melissa are going to follow them, and that's the end of this line. So you got to get it now while I'm here. I appreciate Dr. Scott's message. Glad he's back on the network, Silver Springs. Oh, you're not going to call if I keep reading these. So I'll just read them by myself. You get on the telephone, give me some message while I'm live right now. We're here live. Been here since 6 o'clock. We'll continue until 11 p.m. tonight on the 20th anniversary of being on Channel 56. Get on the phone and talk to me. All right, you're calling real good, and I hate to put a stop to it. But I want to talk to you now for a few minutes, and then I'll open the phones again. So finish the calls you have. Find a place to sit down, Voices of Faith. want to see if you can see this blackboard behind me. As I get up in a minute. Get ready to follow me, you camera people. I spent a year doing this a few years ago. I never thought I'd pastor. I was trained to run a university, or teaching one. There's some seats over here, so find the seats, everybody. Move quickly and find a place to sit. The reason I have to do these pastoral speeches that I do every so often is the reality of social organizations. I worked with Professor Cowley to develop a taxonomy for analyzing any social institution. This is old hat to some of you, but listen close. What am I going to do with this crazy thing that won't stay in my pockets? Maybe I'll go in this one. Why do clothes designers make jackets with pockets designed to have things fall out? You know, there are a lot of dummies in the world that are doing things. These jackets are made for hands, I guess, to do funny things. They're sure not designed to hold anything. I'm going to lose my glasses if I don't pay attention. Anyway, he designed a system, a taxonomy for analyzing social institutions. Now, most areas of learning, the taxonomy is there when you start to study it. Doesn't matter what language. It's already been done for you. You don't even think about it. Now, if you study botany, Linnaeus already worked out the taxonomy based on the reproductive processes of plants. You don't even have to think about it. Whether you're studying botany in Germany or studying it in French, studying it in any language, it's already worked out. Geology is the same. They've worked out their taxonomy. You can study the pyramids. They've got a taxonomy. It's wrong most of the time, and most people's academic reputations are tied up in it. Social institutions, there's so much argument, fighting, because nobody ever worked out a taxonomy. Cowley left the president of a major university in Michigan and took a Lyman Jacks professorship at Stanford to make all of we doctoral students help him develop a taxonomy to analyze social institutions. I then took it around the world for about 18 years with missions, boards, training overseas schools of higher education to do self-study with the taxonomy in order to transfer leadership from missionaries to the nationals. I can analyze you with this taxonomy. A taxonomy is just a verbal set of pegs to hang things on to organize your thought processes, whatever the focus of subject or attention. Just nobody had ever done it for social institutions. And they're not talking intelligently with commonly defined terms. I can analyze you. I can analyze any institution on simple little mental pegs, which I simplified from Cowley's process. I don't know if you can see this. The what? Can you see it? And the who? Now the what is purposes, functions, structures, and controlling forces. have to practice to write in English again. That's the what. The who? Personnel? I don't even know if I spelled it right. I'm in a hurry. Clientele? Patrons? Those who support in any way? Products. And the products, you got to overlap that with the who. We're talking about person products. What the organization is designed to do with the persons, the clients, that it's working its purposes on. Purposes are objective. And subjective. Subjective is what anybody thinks the purposes are. Anybody. Everybody has an opinion, particularly if it's religion or politics. Objective purposes are both official and written. Most organizations are founded by a person who has a purpose in mind. A few times groups have formed an organization, and usually it's like, as one has said, a camel is a horse produced by a committee. And by consensus, they form the organization. That's how our government was formed, a consensus of the colonies who would allow an overriding federal government to come into being based upon commonly agreed upon limitations for the common good. And the social contract was drawn, allowing the government to come into existence. That's the big difference between our Bill of Rights, for example, and our Constitution, and the British form of government. Their code of laws goes through centuries. Their equivalent to our Bill of Rights, the Magna Carta, the king granted it and withdrew it 32 different times. In this country, the king, quotes, the government was not allowed to come into existence except by this contract that acceded to the Bill of Rights that protects the minorities. But most organizations are founded by an individual. And there were strong individuals who put the shape on our government. Now, the church is a social organization, and there is a person who founded it. And that person, Christ, as the expression of God, had a purpose. He said, I will build my church, and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it. It was to be made up of clients, bought and paid for, with his own precious blood. And as we started the book of Romans, Paul says, doulos, Paul, slave of Christ, purchased. The word says you're not your own, you're bought with a price. If any man will come after me, hate not his father, mother, wife, children, brother, sister, yea, and his own life also, he cannot be my disciple. And whosoever does not take up his cross and follow me cannot be my disciple. This, of all organizations, is one that is founded with a subjective person who has a subjective purpose for bringing it into being and pays the price, takes the responsibility to offer it. And his subjective views became objective, because you can hardly be more official than God. I think you agree with that. Hardly be more official than God. And his purposes are written down. They're written. Any organization, including the church of which we're a part here, the little section within the body of Christ. I had to remind the people when I came here and Faith Center was on the rocks. It had a constitution and bylaws. It had official written statements of purpose. And when we were having some quarrels with some people in those days as I was trying to rescue the church, I had to remind them that our bylaws, our charter, our official bringing into existence entity clearly states that God's Word is the ultimate authority. That's why I always had fun with attorneys and judges. I remember the very first lawsuit that I filed one about that thick. And the judge said, "Did you write this?" I said, "Yeah." About that thick. One of the claims against the government was they sent me a subpoena. Now, subpoenas are written by a dumb attorney in his office. And the subpoena says, "You are hereby commanded. You're hereby commanded to be such and such a place for a deposition at a certain time." I sued him for violating one of the amendments. Involuntary servitude. You change your terminology. You don't command me out of the blue to show up in your damned office. That's involuntary servitude. The judge said, "Are you serious?" "Serious as a heart attack," I said. "Change your words. I won't put my hand on a Bible and swear. Jesus said, let your yea be yea and your nay be nay. Don't swear. The implication is everything else I say, except when I put my hand on this Bible, is a lie. You can't believe anything I say unless I do this." I'm like the loyal old professor. The biggest liars will lay both hands on the Bible. They'll stand on it if necessary. Oh, yeah. I make them artfully create something else. I'm willing to sign under penalty of perjury. I'm not going to swear. I still admire the little lady that won. Still admire the little lady that won the lawsuit up in Minnesota at the Supreme Court. She wouldn't serve on a jury. Now, one of the reasons this government came into existence, the pursuit of justice, and part of that is a commitment to the trial by your peers and jury system. She wouldn't serve. She said, "The Bible says, judge not, that you be not judged." So she wouldn't judge. They took her to the Supreme Court. Now, in those days, the test was the First Amendment rights, and that was a religious right. She felt her religious rights were being intruded. That the test in those days, though it's eroded now until compelling state interest is one of them wants to break wind. They just make up any compelling state interest. But in those days, there were still some real constitutionalists on the Supreme Court who really believed that those people who wrote the Bill of Rights meant what they said. And therefore, the amendments were priority position. Now, if you want to say your constitutional rights are violated, anything in the body of the Constitution, be it the Commerce Clause or something else, you got the burden of proof to prove that your rights are being violated. But when you move to the Bill of Rights, these are what's called priority position rights, and the government has to prove its right of entrance. And the condition in those days was a compelling state interest. The very survival of the state is at stake, and that's why we are compelled to go into this area. Second test, there had to be a less intrusive, no less intrusive method available. Well, they decided that, yes, her refusal to sit on a jury was a compelling state interest. Because without the jury system, part of our fabric of society and the reason for the Constitution erodes. But was it a compelling state interest in that the survival of the state was at stake, not one little woman in Minnesota? The chances of everybody in America taking this position, slim and none. And therefore, they didn't even have to get to the less intrusive. They excused her from jury duty. This is still a Supreme Court case. In fact, I think if I were called to jury duty, I would say on the paper, I will not judge anybody because of my religious convictions, and therefore I don't care if you've got videotapes of them raping their mother, I will say not guilty. And I don't think any prosecutor wants me on his jury. Well, don't you have a public jury? No, 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 no. There are enough people doing nothing that they can do it. They have nothing else to do. I got other things to do. Involuntary servitude. Everybody has opinions, as I just expressed some. Now, once the church comes into existence for 2,000 years, people other than the founder, people who didn't shed their blood for it, people who didn't pay for it, have their idea of what the church should be doing. And particularly those that are not church people. I mean, everybody you meet on the street will tell you what the church ought to be doing. And you get caught up in that popularity approach. You get caught up in that churchmanship idea that you must seek approval of men. You're not even going to come close to him who was rejected of all men. Christ's subjective views became the objective, and your subjective views that are not in line with him are not worth talking about. Period. And his purposes are written. The church, he said, I'll build. Well, let's take the word church. Oh, I haven't got room. Didn't plan ahead. Kyriakon. Get the word K and K on the end. Kyriakon. They call Jesus Lord. Kyrios. Kyrios. It was the other side of what Paul said when he called himself doulos. In that New Testament world, total Lord and Master. Total Lord and Master. No rights of any kind. Total Lord and Master. You are not your own. You're bought with a price. You're on your way to damnation. You can't save yourself. You're all falling short of the glory of God, including me. And there is only one way out. The faith way, which runs to, leans on, and forsakes self, and becomes his. That's it. The New Testament world exhibited this behavior until the world looking at them, those who call Jesus Lord, gave them a name. This was given to them by the world. They exhibited a quality of attachment to an unseen master until they called them the Lords. Old timers have heard this message, but it's been too long. The Lords. What Kyriakon means. it became Kirku, Kirche in the German, Kirchen from the Scandinavian languages, the Kirk, Scottish, and with the hard sound from the German, church, dropping the hard sound that we leave there in the word character and making it soft, church. That's what the word church means. The Lord's. When he said, I will build my church and the gates of hell shall not prevail against it, he used the word ek, kleh, zia. Three words. Ek, out, from. As we say, ek pistios, eis piston, from faith or out from faith, eis into faith, through faith, ek, out from. Kleh, to call is the root, out called. Zia, ones. The New Testament day, they didn't have the newspapers as we have them, didn't have TV, didn't have radio. A loose translation's assembly. People would assemble. A person would go down the streets and call people out. And the purpose for the assembly was the caller and the purpose for which he called them. And they assembled. That's why Jesus had to add the pronoun. I will build my ecclesia. Not just any assembly. The one that I have called out for my purposes. They're mine. I purchased them. The Lord's. I call them out for my purposes. So I don't have any confusion at all what the purpose of the church is. And your views of what the church is do not amount to a can of beans unless you can do it from God's Word. And God gave some apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers, and that's a hyphenated word. If you want it in the Greek, God gave some the apostles, the prophets, the evangelists, the pastor, teacher, pastoring teachers, hyphenated, one office for the perfecting of the saints to bring to completion, teleos, not perfection as spotless, complete in the purpose for which he calls you, which is to the work of the ministry, till we all come to a measure, the fullness of the measure of the stature of Christ, to a knowledge of the perfect man, to the fullness of the measure of the stature of Christ. Now, I don't have any doubts of any kind as to why the church exists, and you can get personnel because they have talent. They don't have a clue about Jesus' purposes. You can seek clients with Madison Avenue technique. I want clients in my church that want these purposes unfolded to them until they can be brought to completion. You can seek patrons because they have money. I'll give a damn about your money. Don't send me any money until I first teach you. If you don't want to support this ministry because of the teaching it does, I don't want any of your money. And if I can tough it out, to keep this track firm and secure on his purposes, which I try to do every Sunday morning as I unfold the word and all around the world, we'll go home together. And he'll say, enter, well done, good and faithful servant. Now you can go find a pastor that wants your goodwill and popularity and wants to have a committee to decide what we want to do. Or you can come to the cathedral where you're going to be told what God wants you to do through his word. And I don't intend to change the next 30 or 40 years. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
That's the kind of church you want, then get on the phone and tell me and get